Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday to you. TGIF, here we go. It's almost conference championship weekend, and we are ready for it. Here on Sports Daily, we are going to pick both games a little bit later for the friends Brandon Zenner and TJ Cleland. Paul Savage also in for those picks. He'll join us in the second hour. They all will as we do that. So looking forward to it, getting ready for the Chiefs this weekend, of course, in trying to make history there, Tommy. You can leave us your comments on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can call us on KFH on the hotline. Thanks for listening to us there. You can leave us your voice messages on the Odyssey app, which is always a great way to get in touch with the program. So, look, it's going to be fantastic. Tommy, here we go today. We're excited about it today. Glad to be here with you. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, happy to be here. Happy Friday. Looking forward to jumping right in. Big time weekend in the NFL. It's what we have worked for, you know, almost all season long. I know that, you know, the Chiefs are one step away from potentially making history, but they're going to have to go through Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills to make it happen. So looking forward to getting into all of that today.
We'll have that, and of course, we'll have the Shockers last night, who come up just short again against Memphis on the road. Game they had a shot at, and they just couldn't get it done in the end. They, I think, got that game to the style that they liked it or wanted it, probably, and it just didn't go through. So we'll talk about that as well, because it was a pretty good effort for the Shockers last night, but it was another loss, and they're looking up at the rest of the conference now, and we'll dig in there as well. A lot of interesting things happening in the NFL coaching carousel. You've got reports out everywhere about certain jobs and guys backing out and then going back in. It's always fun to see how that all plays itself out. And we'll get you ready a little bit for college basketball this weekend as well. Getting ready, Tommy, for some nice weather today for the first time in a while. Maybe get rid of some of this ice. I don't know. Like, I've never seen anything like this. Like, you go and you look on our street right now, and almost all the ice is gone, except for our house and like half the driveway that I haven't been able to get shoveled, and the street. It's like a perfect, and it's just the way the sun shines this time of year and the shadows of the trees. And I am so ready. It's like driving over. I don't even know how to describe backing out of my driveway right now. And you're just like bouncing up and down, trying to get through that ice, sliding around everywhere. God, can we get rid of this? You've lived here your whole life. I've been here a little more than a decade.
Yeah.
I have never seen ice like this, this thick, that will not go away.
I am really proud of your restraint, because we've been talking about this for so long, and yeah, you were about to take a sledgehammer out to your driveway. I'm proud of you and your maturity that you haven't done that up to this point.
Thanks to the viewers for preventing me. I did take to the street. I did take a smaller hammer just to see.
Okay.
I was like, can I just loosen this up enough to like get the shovel after it? And so like it was, I don't know, whatever day it was probably this time last week where we actually had a good melting day.
Yeah.
And I go out there and I'm talking like a river that's go, cause the storm drain's right next to our house too. So it's like all this combination. And I mean, water is like flowing hard, Tommy, as if it were flooding from all that melt off, but it's still a little slushy. So we're having to like shovel out the slush so that the water will flow through. And I'm looking at it and knowing the next day, that's when we were about to go Arctic. I'm like, it's just going to create an ice skating rink in front of my house.
I love how you actually, you took it out to the street. You're like, you know what? I'm not going to test it on my property, on my driveway.
That's right.
I'll go out into the street and you know, if it breaks the concrete, if it does, whatever, like no big deal. It's not my property.
We'll test it out there on the asphalt.
I do appreciate that.
Yeah. And I was, it just like a couple little, I did test it on the steps of my, because I felt bad for, I don't know if I'm the only person in the world. I got a Ring camera, or a camera, doorbell camera for recently. I finally jumped on the train. Maybe I shouldn't have done that because it really puts into perspective how many things my wife buys online. And so like, I was like this, we're going to kill a poor delivery driver with these steps. So I did test the hammer theory very lightly on the steps, to be fair. It wasn't first to the street. And I knew I could lightly tinker with it to try and get it off those steps. And then, man, we're talking like 5-6 packages a day. It's crazy. I'm like, how many packages can come? Like every day. It's wild. Are you an order online guy?
I do it occasionally. My wife orders online all the time. I'm just kind of used to it. Like I'm numb to it at this point.
One of those things where we should just keep our mouths shut, probably, that I'm really bad at.
And every once in a while, like I usually don't say, like 90% of the packages that come, I usually don't say anything. Occasionally, and typically, like if I'm the one carrying it in, like if it's on the front porch and I'm bringing it in, if it's heavy, then at that point I'm like, what did you get and how much was it? And usually I don't even really want to know the answer to that question, but I can't help myself, so I'll ask it and then it'll turn into this whole thing. So usually I just keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, why is that? Why do we know? Like this will be a problem if I ask this question.
Yeah.
Nothing will change.
You can't,
it will do absolutely
you just can't help yourself.
No good.
Like I can't help myself.
I can't either. And there are lots of it. And so now, like I think before, I just wouldn't have known they were coming, right? Because if I don't bring them in, I don't care. But now, because I get a ding every time, I'm like, good Lord. And I'm not exaggerating here, and I know I'm in the minority on this. I think I have ordered something online to be delivered to our house 3 times in the last calendar year. That's it. So like, I still get excited when a package comes, You're waiting on something. Yeah. You're like, oh, cool. A package is coming. You know, and most people it's like, no, we're going to have everything delivered. I don't know. I don't know why, but I just can't get into it. If I need something, I'll drive my happy rear end to wherever I need to get it from and I'll get it.
I can do, you know, like a lot of, I like Amazon. I'll order things on Amazon, you know, when I need them or whatever. But some people go way too far. Like the people who, I can't do, and my wife isn't this way either, like grocery delivery. I'm not like, just
I
go
did
to,
one of those
go to the grocery store, nice. Like I'll do like pickup or whatever. But I don't know. I like if we're in a bind, there was one time our entire household was sick and we had no food in the house and like none of us felt like getting out. And we did delivery. Like it was kind of a necessary thing. We did it. No big deal. But as a regular thing, that takes it a little bit too far.
So we got a free offer on one of those and we did it. And it was handy. I'll tell you, it was handy just to know, like, they'll be here at some point. My problem is I like taking the kids to the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's like walking around with the cart and just messing around with them. It's like they get excited and we get something out of the, you know, toy machine or whatever, the little quarter machine when we leave.
We did one of those, like the meal service things, you know, where you order, like you pick the food out online, get those delivered. And like the first week or two, I was like, yeah, this is really cool. Like, and then it was like, they just sat in the fridge. Like, you want to go get McDonald's? Yeah. Like, let's go get McDonald's. And then they just sat in the fridge and we'd like got rid of it.
They'll cook it for you.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I don't know. I cook now every weekend. Like, but that's because football's on. Once we're done with football, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll probably eat a lot more McDonald's. All right, stick with us. Speaking of football weekend, we're going to preview the championship games. Let's talk Shockers when we come back. They fall in Memphis. An impressive effort, but not enough. What do we think? That's next on Sports Daily.
gotta hear this. Hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Tommy, it is that time. It is a Friday. It is time for you to tell us about that Friday Fit.
Yeah, you're right. The Friday Fit today, our friends over at 3570 Golf Company, and I'm wearing the Amber Waves golf polo today. We're getting closer and closer to springtime, getting closer and closer to being able to go out and play golf and, you know, get out there and hit some golf clubs. And they are a local Midwest golf company. You got to check out all of their apparel. They've got brand new releases, and it all embodies what we love here about this part of the country, the Midwest, the Plains, all of that. So the Amber Wave shirt, it's got, you know, little grain, little wheat stalks on there. And so it's perfect. You got to go check it out. 35x70golfco.com. Use the keyword Tommy. You can get 10% off your first order. So go and check it out. We appreciate their support of the program.
Appreciate those guys. It is almost golf season. We're getting ready for it. Excited for it. I got some new clubs I got to test out. I got to test those out for the first time this weekend when we go swing them. I joked us. We're going out to Crestview, another great supporter of the program. Give them a call. This is a great feature that they have that I'm about to test for the first time. I think you've done this before, but they've got two simulators. What do they call them? Trackmans?
Trackman, yeah.
So top of the line simulators where you can plug in the courses. So Tommy kind of talked me into, you know, trying to up my game, get some new clubs. So I went in there. They helped me fit some clubs. We hit a bunch of different ones. Great golf pro out there, Trent, helped me find or just like through the chart. Like here's what you're hitting on each one. There was a set where I hit it quite a bit further. So that's what we went with. But I haven't, you know, played with them or done anything with them. So this will be the first time. And I joked with Tommy. Well, maybe it's not a joke. Like I really hope this is that kind, you know, those kinds of clubs that just fix everything that's wrong with your game. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to fix everything, but it certainly will help. I mean, when you've got, you know, new technology in your golf clubs, that, you know, that certainly will help. So I'm looking forward to it. There's nothing like, you know, in the wintertime when it's cold, you can't actually get out and play golf to go and do the simulator. College basketball is going to be on tomorrow. Enjoy some beers, have some wings. Like that's the plan. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and look. My old ones were only 15 years old, so let's not be too judgy here. I felt judged by Tommy every time we played. Like, you know.
Well, and weren't they like garage sale clubs or something? Like,
No. These were okay clubs. Okay. They were tailor made. I don't know, burners or something. It was actually a gift from my wife when I played, you know, the most in my life, and it was a helper set for sure. Which is what I need. These will be a little more. We'll see. We'll see if it works. I'm really optimistic that it's just going to fix everything that's wrong with my game. So if it doesn't, I'll blame you for talking me into it. How about that?
Fine with me. Fine with me.
Shockers last night. They had it. They didn't have it, but they were right there in position. And then late in the game, to me, like as I'm watching it, and both teams were turning it over, it was an ugly, nasty, messy game. You look at the Shockers and you're like, well, God, you can't turn the ball over 22 times, but then they forced 20. So it's like, okay, well, it was just sort of that kind of a game, but man, and they even out rebounded Memphis, but I got to tell you, did not feel like they out rebounded Memphis because of how many just like loose ball second opportunities Memphis got late in that stretch where they were able to ultimately pull away. And it was an 8-point win, but it felt right there for Wichita State, and they just couldn't get over the finish line. And Tommy, I want to be really encouraged by that, but that happens all the time. And so that it is, I think it's good that they played well and brought it and did all those things, but it's not good that they lost the game again, that they maybe could have won.
The stat line is going to show that, you know, the Shockers forced, what you say, 20 turnovers. But there were several of those that were unforced errors from Memphis, like especially early in the game. Memphis, they shot themselves in the foot a lot. Like there were some things that were uncharacteristic, I feel like, for a team the caliber of Memphis. Now, that's not taking anything away from Wichita State, because they did force some turnovers. They mucked the game up enough, you know, to be able to, you know, get Memphis off of their rhythm and out of their routine. I thought, especially in the first half, you know, that was really important for Wichita State, because it would have been, you know, a disaster, I think, for the Shockers had Memphis been able to come out of the gate firing. And Wichita State did a really good job of making things more difficult for them. And then you add in some of the self-inflicted turnovers and the mistakes that Memphis had early on. That's ultimately what kept Wichita State in the game at halftime and you know, even into the second half. But you're right. You know, in the second half, the Tigers were able to, you know, find their rhythm a little bit more. It was, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't a very pretty game from an aesthetic standpoint by either team, right? And that, I think, favors Wichita State. But it was just enough for Memphis down the stretch to be able to do enough, make enough shots, get enough second chance opportunities to be able to put Wichita State away.
So Wichita State started 1-5 now in conference play. They started, I think, 1-8 last year in the American. And just looking back, because it felt like to me, as you see the Shockers lose to East Carolina in a tight one, lose to Memphis there in a tight one, lose to Temple in a tight one, it's the same kind of thing we saw a lot of last year, right? They were losing, but they were losing close. In that 1-8 start last year, you had a 4-point loss, a 2-point loss, a 5-point loss. Another 2-point loss. And so it's feeling an awful lot like it felt a year ago. And I don't know what I think about that. Like, I do appreciate that they're playing much better than they were in that stretch earlier where they were, you know, allowing 90 points to everybody. So I like that, but I don't like that. I don't like settling for, all right, they went on the road and played a good team well, because they still lost. And like that expectation, like, we can't lower the expectation so much that we're excited that they brought good effort on the road against Memphis. Like, they need to win games at the end of the day, and they're just not doing that at all. They're 1-5 again in a bad conference. They're sitting at the bottom, and the only team that they've beaten in the conference is the team below them in the standing, Charlotte, who's 1-6. They are below everybody else in the league. And that's a big problem. Like, what in the world are we doing when we look at the American Athletic Conference standings 2 years in a row now, and we see Wichita State at the bottom with the likes of Charlotte and UTSA and Rice? Like, what is that? That's not going to work. Like, it's not. That's just, like, they have to win more games. And so the next step for this team, and hopefully it happens sooner than it did last year, is to start winning the games. You'll remember the Shockers kind of heated up down that final portion of the season, made a nice little run. Like, if they can just do that earlier, they're going to have a chance still to climb up. There are only, and I maintain this, there are only two, and we haven't seen UAB yet, but there are only two teams that you'll go into and say, yeah, they're probably better or more talented than the Shockers. Maybe three if you want to put Temple there. And that's it. And yet the Shockers are at the bottom of this thing. And that's, I don't want to lose sight of that.
Don't you think, though, that there comes a point where the proof is in the pudding, right? Where, like, we can say all day long, and we mentioned this, like, before every game and after every game, like, the talent is there. You look at just the talent in this conference, and Wichita State should be here. But the fact is that they're not.
And which, so, is worse.
Yeah, eventually, you know, I think you have to have that conversation, like, hey, the proof is in the pudding. Like, this team just isn't very good. And they had opportunities. I think, the most frustrating thing. They had opportunities, but when it mattered most, this team is not very good. Like, last night, they led for more than half of the game, but they fell apart when it mattered most, with a couple costly turnovers down the stretch, the final couple minutes against Memphis. Team's not very good. Like, when it matters most, when there's an opportunity to win a game, the team's not very good. Now, can that be changed? Sure, because the talent is there, and we've seen flashes of it as the season has gone on. You know, but I think that it's a fool's errand to sit here game after game after game and say, well, I mean, look at all the teams in the conference. They should be better. But the fact is, they're not right now. They're just not.
And I don't know which is worse. that they should be or that they're not. I honestly don't know which is. I think it would be that they're not, and I don't believe.
I think
that,
it is that it's not.
But I don't believe that. I honestly don't. I think they should be, which is better, but still not good.
Right. Neither one is good. I mean, neither one is good.
Yeah. But I do think it would be still a rung below if you were in this conference and just not as good as the other teams in it. I think that's worse because that's a bigger picture issue. Not only are you not playing well enough to win, but you're not getting the appropriate amount of talent to do that. And I really don't believe that. I think this team should be sitting with a better record than it is. I do. I think we have seen, and the reason is we have seen it this year. We have seen it lots of times this year in reality. I think we saw it against Northern Iowa. I think we saw it against Western Kentucky, against St. Louis, against Minnesota, against East Tennessee State, against Kansas State. Like, we've seen it this year. I don't know what it is about conference play that has given this generation of the Shockers so much trouble. I don't. I can't figure it out. Because that team that won all those games I just talked about should not be 1-5 in the American. They shouldn't be. Two losses, maybe three. And they're not. And so it's like, okay, what has to change to actually win these games? You had a chance. You had Memphis on the ropes.
Yeah,
they played like crap.
Maybe take care of the basketball.
And you had a chance to get them.
Take care of the basketball in the final 2 minutes, right?
Especially late. Yeah, especially. Take care of the basketball. And some of those were, and this all gets amplified too because it's a 1-5 start. I think, you know, if it was a, you know, if they were 3-2 coming into that game, we'd probably feel different because some of that was unlucky, I'll call it. You know, bad bounces off the rim. Like some of those rebounds missed and opportunities Memphis kept getting, it was bad fortune. It wasn't bad play as much as, but it all gets amplified. It all gets amplified when you're again 1-5. After last year, you were 1-8 to start conference play. And now 3 out of your next 4 are on the road. And the only home game you have is North Texas, who is one of those teams who happens to be really good, who happens to be right now like a bubble team for the NCAA tournament. That's how good they are, according to their net ranking. They're 52. That's a team that could absolutely get an at-large. You got them and 3 road games over the next 4. So what happens if this continues through that stretch of basketball? You know what I mean? Like, you better turn it around.
Yeah.
Or this opportunity to still climb up in the standings that we keep talking about is gone. Like at that point, you can't do that anymore.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, be overly pessimistic here. I'm not saying that that there shouldn't be a hope or even an expectation to climb up these rankings. But have we been given much of an indication that that will actually happen? Or is it the same thing that we've done, you know, basically throughout the course of this season, especially conference play, where it's like, okay, well, like they should. We're waiting for it to happen. The talent is there, and then we have the same conversation over and over and over again. Where, like, I mean, if you look at again the proof in the pudding, the one conference game that they won against Charlotte, they didn't even look incredibly impressive in that game. They won the game. Don't get me wrong, and it was like desperate times where they needed to get that victory, but there has not been. I mean, man, probably what going back all the way to the K-State game, which we're talking about before Christmas, the last time that there was a convincing, optimistic victory from this team, right? I mean, there hasn't been one since
probably.
Then. I mean, because even the Friends game, I don't think you would look at and say,
no.
Yeah, that was an encouraging result for that game.
That is what keeps dangling it out there. At least for me, like, I know that this team, because we've seen it. I know the team is capable of, like, only having the Memphis loss and maybe the Temple loss so far in conference play. In fact, that's probably where it's where things should be. And again, I do think it's worse for the expectation to just say, nah, they probably should be right where they are. I think that's worse for the program.
I think you're right. I think that's probably realistic.
Well, I don't know that answer. I don't believe
they're
it.
They're 1-5.
It No, I know. I don't believe that right now, but it could be, right? Just because I keep leaning into what we've seen them do, and probably because I want to, right? Yeah. I don't want to.
There's
get
more
to the
of,
point
and
where
I get,
like,
I get that, and I respect that. There's this like yearning for it, like, man, yeah, like, we believe it. We've seen it. We've seen it in flashes and in spurts, and then it just kind of falls flat. And look, I'm not taking anything away from the effort last night. There were there were games in early conference play. I mean, I'm thinking back even like the UMKC game and the non-conference where clearly the effort was lacking. And it was like, what the heck is going on here? I didn't see that at all last night. The guys played hard, and it was they did, I think, a really good job, especially early, in getting Memphis out of their game and off their rhythm. And I'm like, okay, this could actually happen here. And then it kind of falters, you know, same old song. Well, and it just kind of falters at the end.
That's what's frustrating, because we can definitively say that was a good game plan. They executed what they wanted to do. They got Memphis uncomfortable. They put Memphis where they wanted Memphis, and they couldn't close it out. If you took everything else away and looked at that in a vacuum, we would sit here today and we would say, man, that was a pretty good effort by the Shockers last night. Like, it would be a positive, you know, probably conversation. But when you're 1-5, you can't do that. And when you're 1-5 after you started last year, 1-8, you can't do that.
Yep.
Like, they're playing themselves out of relevance way too early in the conference schedule.
Again.
And I guess you do, you know, last year we'd sat here and said, look, this team could, you know, have a puncher's chance. And I remember conversations about, could they have a puncher's chance? And they did in the conference tournament. And they could again this year. And you can, you know, lean into that. It's like it's basically the NCAA tournament for the Shockers. I love that conference tournaments happen. They're fun, and they still leave that hope for you. I just don't want to have to wait for that to get excited about Shocker basketball. And look, they got a chance here. That North Texas game at home is another great opportunity. North Texas is essentially thought about in the metrics and everything about the same way Memphis is. So maybe you can get that one at home, and then you go win the three road games you're supposed to win. I'll bet you, Tommy, right now, we'll talk bets and lines. I will bet you that at Tulsa, at Charlotte, at South Florida, Wichita State's favored in every one of those games. Vegas agrees with us, by the way, that they're better than their record would indicate. The guys that called the game last night, they don't have any skin in this game. They said the same thing. But I tell you, the Shockers are better than their record indicates. And while that makes you feel a little bit better.
What does that tell you? What should that tell us? I mean, that's an execution thing, right?
It's a totally separate issue. Yeah. And they're two very different things than if that wasn't being said. That's a bigger problem in the macro, right? In the micro, it's a very frustrating thing. And that's, I feel like most Shocker fans would come into today and just be frustrated that they had them right there. And the other part is, you're watching, you're like, man, can they hang on to this? It's going to be tough. Like, they're not getting that separation.
Couldn't you see it a mile away? Like, after 10 minutes
in the
second half, like with 10 minutes to go in the game, you're like, and again, there were opportunities for them to extend the lead to, I think, nine at one point. Couldn't do it. Memphis hits a three, then it drops down to a 4-point
lead. It's tough.
It's rough.
It's tough. All right, we're going to begin to talk football next. Felix Johnson joins us again to talk a little Chiefs, and then we'll make some picks for championship weekend as well on this Friday. Stick around. Sports Daily coming right back.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And that's right, we welcome in Felix Johnson back to the program. Felix, welcome back here to Sports Daily as the Chiefs just keep on trucking on their way. 7 straight AFC championships, looking for a 3rd straight Super Bowl. Nothing changes, right? Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes is in this thing now for lifetimes for a lot of NFL fans. And we're right smack in the middle of it. How excited are you for this game?
You know, it's going to be really exciting. I'm a big football fan in general. I mean, obviously the Chiefs matter, but when you get to see two quarterbacks of this caliber with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, I mean, we only get to see this a handful of times every year. I mean, luckily we've seen this particular matchup for the last 4 years now, but how many times did we get to see Manning Brady? It was only five times, and those two guys played for 20 years apiece, and Brady played forever and a half. But it's awesome that we get to see that as football fans and as Chiefs fans. We've dominated that matchup, and so it's even more exciting to see that. And so hopefully things continue on Sunday.
Who's got more pressure on their shoulders, do you think? Is it Josh Allen trying to get rid of all of the demons of not being able to beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs? Or is it Mahomes trying to lead the Chiefs to something that has never been done before in the NFL?
You know, I think for Josh Allen, it's the same conversation we've had every year. And so to me, the pressure kind of reduces a little bit. It's like, if he loses to Mahomes again, well, he just lost to Mahomes again. For Patrick Mahomes, I think it's completely different in that the Chiefs probably will never have a chance to go for a three-peat ever again. Like, Travis Kelce's not playing for that much longer. Patrick Mahomes is 30. Like, he's going to be 30 next year. I know that's plenty of time in quarterback years. But Andy Reid, obviously, well into his 60s now. So this team is never going to be able to three-peat again. So you have to do this, and especially against probably the best team remaining other than yourself. I'd probably say this is probably the Super Bowl this weekend. And so I think the pressure of history and just every year we're trying to win the Super Bowl is on Patrick Mahomes, because they probably won't be able to three-peat ever again.
And then how do they do it? That's where I'm fascinated by this game, because I thought last week it was predictable that Kelce was going to have a big game. It was, you know, the way that game played out, you could see it coming. I can't get a good grasp of this one. Both of these teams have been very happy to let the other teams make mistakes lately and then take advantage of them. We saw that last week in the games that they played, and it worked. But can you go into this one, like if you're the Chiefs or the Bills, can you go in with that same mindset of let's sit back and let them make mistakes? Because now you're playing the team that doesn't do that anymore. Right. Or do you think aggression ramps up a little bit? Vegas certainly does. They got a total at 48.5 today. They think this thing will be aggressive like that. What's your take on it?
I think it will be too. I mean, the only team that the Chiefs have allowed 30 points to in the last 2 years is the Buffalo Bills. And so I think, from a matchup standpoint, you kind of got to factor in, oh yeah, Jalen Watson, the Chiefs' number two corner, wasn't there for them against the Bills. And Hollywood Brown hadn't been there all season long. And so there's another layer to the offense and defense. So Spags can be a little bit more creative when it comes to pressure. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid have another target to work with. They had a big shot go down the field to Hollywood Brown, didn't connect on it, being that Xavier Worthy was the only receiver to catch a ball last week. But I think that there's so much different from the week, whatever 8 or 9 matchup that it was, for the Chiefs, at least just having guys back. And I guess the same thing can be said for the Bills. And they have, like we've talked about here, the revenge that they want from their hearts, like from the last 3 years. They're trying to beat the Chiefs like everybody else is.
I'm not sure that, you know, I know that total is pretty high, but I don't know if that's really the recipe for the Chiefs. Like, I'm not sure that getting into a track meet with the Bills and what they can do with the explosive offense and everything is really the way that the Chiefs want to try to win this game. Can they do it? I mean, maybe with Hollywood Brown back and all of that, but as we all know, the Chiefs haven't scored more than 30 points in a single game this year. The Bills have done it 13 times. They've scored 30 or more points. So how do you feel like, if the Chiefs want to, you know, obviously take down what the Bills are wanting to do, is it trying to slow the pace of the game down, controlling the ball and keeping the Bills off the field? Or do you think that if this game does get into a track meet, that we'll see a different kind of Chiefs that we've, you know, than we've seen all season long?
You know, I think that that's kind of how the Chiefs have to win. I think that the Bills have kind of handcuffed themselves over the last year and a half and some change, and they haven't really suffered from it by having Josh Allen just say, you know what, no interceptions, no turnovers, but he's not putting up these crazy performances like we've seen year in and year out. Until this year, he's going to be – might win the MVP this year. We'll see, depending on how the voters feel about Lamar Jackson's year. But I think that in that particular scenario, the Chiefs have capitalize on Josh Allen's mistakes. He throws a pick or two or a fumble and different things like that. Like even in last year's game where he played as safe as possible on that last drive, what did he have? He had a fumble that I believe Dawson Knox fell on and a ball that hit L'Jarius Sneed in the hands. And that was on the last drive right before they missed the field goal. So I think Josh Allen has that mistake proneness inside of him, but that's what the Bills need to win. And so the Chiefs on the other side, just keep up with them offensively. And that might just mean scoring 27 points. That might not, that's not 30 points. And it's not the craziest thing we've seen. We saw them put up 23 last week against the Texans defense that is better than this Bills defense. And so I think that we see a Chiefs offense like we have seen in the playoffs in years past. They put up points and they're just going to find a way to win the same way they do every year because it's the playoffs.
All right, Felix, let's talk about Xavier Worthy. I keep getting this there's this little thing in the back of my head that keeps, you know, whispering to me that this will be an Xavier Worthy game. Like he's going to, this will be his chance here to do something special. I just have this feeling that they'll use him in some really creative ways. And if they are going to take some shots, which they probably will take at least a few, he's going to have opportunities to make his mark on this season. And this is the game. I think he'll have a chance to do it. Do you see anything from him, the receivers in general, or do you think this is another Kelce type game?
Well, you know, that lingering feeling in the back of your head, Jacob, every defensive coordinator all year has felt that despite him not having this big deep threat type of season where we're expecting him to have 850-yard touchdowns. Well, just because he might, you never know. Like, I mean, exactly, because he's just that fast. You don't know. And then you add in Hollywood Brown on the other side of it, and then Kelce, and then Patrick Mahomes is going to make it all work because that's what he does. I think that you're right to always have that feeling in the back of your head where it's like, oh, he might. Oh, it. No, he dropped it again. All right, here we go. And or he ran out of bounds or whatever the case may be. But I think we're at that point in the season and obviously conference championship. He's no longer a rookie. He's played this full year. And so it might be this week. It might be the Super Bowl. And he might start next season with that rejuvenated power, kind of like what we saw from Rashee Rice last year. And in regards to Travis Kelce, it's the playoffs. I mean, that's what Travis Kelce does. He shows up in the playoffs, had 7 catches for 117 yards last week, and we didn't expect that from him if we would have saw the previous 16 games that he played. And so I just think it's Travis Kelce's time, and he's only got a handful of games left because he's 35 or however old he is now. He's only got a handful of games left that he's like, all right, we're going to prove my legacy in these moments, and that will be the conference championship and the Super Bowl.
I thought the pass rush, Felix, in the game against the Texans was a revelation. I mean, you know, usually it'll be one of the guys being able to, you know, get to the quarterback and have a good game, whether that's Chris Jones or George Karlaftis. But it was both of those guys and Felix and Udike Uzomah. Was that more of just them able to get past the offensive line for the Texans? Or do you think that there's something there that can carry over in this game this weekend where they can have some success against the Bills?
You know, if you paid any attention to the Texans all year long, you kind of knew that was the way that they were going to have to beat them, especially when you have a guy like Chris Jones. And I know that not every team has that, but at the same time, Chris Jones, and then you add in FAU, fantastic first name, by the way. and then you add in George Karlaftis, which I had a caller on my old radio show that I used to do many moons ago that would say, is George Karlaftis actually good, or is it because Chris Jones is getting double teamed or whatever it is. I think this year proved that George is that guy. Like he's going to be there for a very long time and maybe even beyond the Chris Jones contract that was put so many Chiefs fans in a fit last year. So I think that this pass rush, when you just think about the individual guys, yeah, the Chiefs have a fantastic pass rush. And then you factor in Chris Jones is getting a double team. Well, then George is on a one-on-one Charles Omenihu, who has been phenomenal since he came back from the injury. And then the same thing with FAU coming on, and then Mike Dana, who pops up out of nowhere and gets a sack every now and then. So I'm a really big fan of where the Chiefs pass rush is now in general, and we just saw that last week.
I'm going to give you one more here, Felix, and it's on the other side of that conversation. The Chiefs offensive line, Joe Tooney's been much better. We know it's not perfect. How confident are you that that can hold up throughout the rest of whatever this postseason run looks like and against a team like Buffalo?
I think that that's going to be where Buffalo puts their emphasis. But again, I don't think they have the pass rush necessarily. I think that Greg Rousseau can be interesting, but I think that can be managed. I think that last week the biggest thing going into the game was Houston's pass rush is about to dominate Kansas City, and that's how Houston's going to win the game. That's the only way Buffalo can win this game, and that's probably their weakest. I wouldn't necessarily say their pass rush is the weakest, but of the four phases, Buffalo's defense is probably the worst. I mean, this is the team that lost to the Rams by giving up 44 points. They beat the Lions, but still gave up 41. So I still think that this is a Buffalo defense that knows they need a pass rush and still can't get there for whatever reason. And so I don't think we're going to see that be that big of a problem for what we talked about last week. Patrick Mahomes has his scrambling, his iconic runs and everything. I won't be shocked if that happens, but the Buffalo pass rush hasn't really worried me that much outside of Greg Rousseau.
Felix Johnson, you can find him on X at Felix R. Johnson. You can find his work at Field Vision. You can find his work at Arrowhead Addict. We appreciate having you in here, Felix. And hopefully we're doing it again because the Chiefs keep winning. And we don't have to have conversations about anything else but the next game.
Absolutely. Oh, man, my heart's palpitating my DraftKings account.
Yeah, I know. We're all making bets. We're running out of time. That's the great fear of the next few weeks is we're almost out of football betting. Felix, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
Man, that is going to make me sad, Tommy. Like, I'm going to be pretty bummed. Like, that's such a big part of my weekends now, like the routine that I have of, like, looking through things, getting everything ready, going at it a certain way. That's almost gone.
You know, you can bet other sports, right? Like, I know that there are.
Yeah, you sure can. Yeah. And you can, I'm not very good at it. I still like to have fun with it, but I feel like I do okay in football. And so, like, I like that more. I get a better read on it. College basketball is flipping impossible this year. Normally, I feel like college basketball is a great opportunity. I have had a hard time with college basketball this year.
Got to get you into the golf betting because, like, there's a pretty decent angle there, get in and have a little bit of success.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm not going to sit and watch golf, though, which I don't – but because I'll sit and watch football or I'll watch college basketball. But, yeah, maybe there's something to take there. I could take a swing at a few things. I know I like to do the majors with everybody else. But, on a weekly basis, I'd need some lessons, we'll call it that, on how to attack that. But we're ready. We're going to pick these games in the second hour. Excuse me. We'll pick them both. We'll pick the Chiefs, the Bills. Seeing that line today at 1.5. The over-under at 48.5. So there's been movement there in these NFL championship games. Not in the other one. The other one's kind of stayed the same all week. But we'll pick them. We'll have the full cast in for the second hour. Let's talk when we come back a little bit about this coaching stuff in the NFL. It was a wild day yesterday. That's next on Sportsnet.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody. Let's start this next hour with a giveaway. If you want to win some HTO, a free iced tea, weather, we're going to have some sunshine. Tommy, go get a suntan and an iced tea today. You can get a free one on us and a free iced or hot coffee drink. They can be used at different times, but you'll get one of each. Good for either Wichita location, East or West or in Derby. All you got to do right now to win those is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. That's T20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rate supply. Good luck, everybody. We welcome back into Sports Daily. We're going to pick and dig into the conference championship games next. So it's been a kind of a wild day and a half or so. Tommy, since we've checked in on the coaching cycle, the big news yesterday was with the Jaguars and the Buccaneers. I don't know how much of that you caught with Liam Cohen, who did a really good job in Tampa. But so it sounds like nobody likes the Jaguars GM Trip Baalke. Like, everybody doesn't like that guy is what it sounds like, because what they did was they came and they interviewed Cohen, who was their top choice, and he turned him down. And then the Bucs came in and said, we'll make you the highest paid coordinator in football. He said, yeah, sure, that sounds great. The next day, I guess the Jaguars then fire their GM, call him back and like, hey, we don't have him anymore. You want to come interview? And he was set to apparently come sign his deal with the Bucs, and then basically ghosted the Bucs while he was then re-engaging with the Jaguars to become, it looks like, their next head coach. I don't have any ill will toward Liam Cohen for this. You know, it's a great opportunity. He didn't like a certain aspect of it. It changed. It sucks for the Bucs, but you know, it's kind of like college, but it sounds like a college football coaching hire. But it was pretty interesting in that one.
It wasn't just Cohen, though. Like, I read reports that there were a number of potential head coaching candidates that did not want to work with Baalke. And what's interesting about it is that the owner, Shad Khan, for the Jaguars, originally, after Doug Peterson was let go, said that he wasn't going to make a change with Baalke because I think the word he used was suicide. It would be organizational suicide to make those major wholesale changes with both the coach and the general manager. But then all of a sudden, you've got multiple head coaching candidates saying, yeah, I'm not going to work with that guy. Don't have any interest in working with him. And then all of a sudden, I think Khan was like, well, crap. Like, not only are we not going to get our number one guy, we might not get number two, number three, number four. I don't even know how many said they didn't want to work with Trent Baalke. And then all of a sudden, they make that change and relieve Baalke of his duties. This is nothing new with Trent Baalke, though. Like, if you'll recall, about 10 years ago, he was the general manager with the Niners with Jim Harbaugh, and the two of them didn't get along. That resulted in Harbaugh leaving the Niners and going to Michigan. And so this has happened before with this guy. I think it's interesting, though, that it took a number of head coaching candidates to say, not working with this dude, before they finally made a change. But ultimately, good on Khan for making the change, and they were able to get their number one guy.
Yeah. I mean, good for the Jaguars, good for Trevor Lawrence. I say it all the time. I'm all for any coaching things that help quarterbacks be the best they can be, because the league is better with great quarterbacks. I think I'm happy there. That was the most dramatic, which says something, because the Cowboys still haven't hired their coach, which is always the most dramatic.
There's some drama in the Big D, though, as well.
There is. So that one's getting interesting. You have all kinds of reports coming out yesterday that Brian Schottenheimer, who was the offensive coordinator this year, is going to be the guy, or is the leader, or they're finalizing it, whatever language you get from these kinds of reports, which is interesting. I some people messaged me about that yesterday morning, and I'm like, God, I really don't have a take on it, because we didn't get a chance to see what he's capable of last year. Dak got hurt, right? So I don't know what he's had a lot of opportunities in the NFL. He's never had, like, he's never blown you away in any of those. He's been around for a long time. Like, he's not Ben Johnson, where he's like all of a sudden got this great offense or anything like that. But he's been around for a while. Don't know him. Never heard him talk. Have no idea. I'm like, well, all right. Like, it
he's
feels
Martin's
like they should have.
Mike, right? I mean, like, he's right? Martin's kid.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it felt like, well, if you were going to just hire from within, why didn't they just do that with Dan Quinn last year, right? As you watch Dan Quinn, you know, probably
or be Kellen
the
Moore.
Coach of the year. Well, because Kellen Moore doesn't need to be the coach, but Dan Quinn would have been great. But to that point, I'm like, well, it's not Kellen Moore. So yeah, okay, fine. Like, I'll take a swing at that, because again, and I say this and I'll just say it here real quick. It's not that I don't think Kellen Moore is good. It's that I don't think Dak is his best with Kellen Moore. And I think we've seen that prove out. So I don't, like, that's the only reason there. Would he have been his best under Schottenheimer? No idea. We didn't really get the chance to see it. It wouldn't be my top choice. But then it doesn't happen, really. And you start to see some of the beats who are more closely connected there say, guys, like, there are a lot of conversations happening. Maybe he's the most likely, but Jerry Jones wants to talk to Pete Carroll. Jerry Jones wants to talk to XYZ. We know he's had a conversation with Prime. Like, this thing isn't in that stage yet where it's like, okay, this is going to be the coach. Now, it may ultimately be that way, but I'm going to give some credit here when I haven't in a while in this process for Jerry Jones. He is talking to a lot of people. He talked to one person when he hired Mike McCarthy, right? He is now engaging a lot of different people, probably with a lot of different ideas. And for Jerry Jones, look, I think that's progress. Now, whether he makes the ultimate right decision or wrong decision, obviously we have to see the games play out to know that answer, but at least he's, you know, not walking into it like, I already know what we're going to do next. You know what I mean? Like, at least he's going through the process, which I think is good.
Yeah, so actually one of our sister stations down in Dallas, the Odyssey station down there, 105.3 The Fan, they reported yesterday that the whole push for Brian Schottenheimer is not being led by Jerry Jones. Brian Broaddus from The Fan reported on that.
That's awesome.
It's basically coming from his kids. It's coming from Steven and Jerry Jr. They're trying to convince Jerry that Brian Schottenheimer is the right choice. But well, that Jerry is not leading this charge, and that he's still kind of up in the air on the direction that he wants to do. In fact, Nick Harris from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported that Jones is talking to Pete Carroll about the position. Potentially, that's there. The NFL Network confirmed both of those, you know, local reports, and that also, you know, there are still guys out there like Coach Prime and others that Jerry Jones is talking to potentially about the decision. But that is interesting, because while it might show progress and growth from Jerry Jones that he is, you know, considering multiple people, if there's a split, if there's a chasm in the family and the kids want one guy but dad's not quite sure, that's a whole different level of drama potentially. Because can you imagine if Brian Schottenheimer comes in but he's not Jerry Jones's choice, like he had to be convinced to bring him on by his kids? Yeah. To me, if I'm Brian Schottenheimer, I feel like I'm walking into the door as a lame duck from day one.
A little bit, who, by the way, went to high school here in Kansas. I think he grew up in the era that Marty was around, was in Overland Park, just for the record. I don't know anything. Again, I don't have a thought on Brian Schottenheimer. He's been around some good places. You know, those are hard. It's hard to gauge that, and we just didn't get a fair look at it with Dak this year. So I'm not sure what to think of it. I would be fine with it, I guess. But a guy like Pete Carroll. So normally, like, the retreads from it, but Pete Carroll, the Cowboys are going to live and die by whatever the next 2 or 3 years of Dak Prescott and his $60 million contract are. So bringing in a grizzled vet who is a proven winner and all of those things like Pete Carroll, I could get on board with that, because you're looking at such a short window anyway. Like, whatever happens with the Cowboys is going to be a small period of time before ultimately age will force them to finally rebuild this thing. So if you're telling me, like, Pete Carroll, yeah, he's old, but really it's only a 2 or 3 year deal here with him. Like, okay, I could get on board with that. I really could. And then, you know, you probably start over at some point, but they could do worse than Pete Carroll. Like, his name hadn't even entered my mind in this process at all.
Is there a concern, like, and I don't know a ton about Brian Schottenheimer other than the fact that he has been in the league or in football, whether it's at the college ranks or in the NFL, for a long time. We're talking like mid-90s. He coached like under his dad in Kansas City, in Washington, and with the Chargers. Is there a concern that he's never been a head coach? And he's been interviewed for head coaching jobs going all the way, dating back almost 20 years, like the mid-2000s. He was interviewed for like the open Jets job, like back in the, you know, Mangini days, I don't know if there's like a concern there that he's always been the bridesmaid, but never the bride. Like, is there a concern there, do you think?
No. I mean, two of the four coaches coaching in conference championship weekend now are first-time head coaches when they got their jobs, and Sean McDermott and Nick Sirianni. The other two were retreads.
Yeah, but both of those guys didn't spend 30 years, you know, as an assistant, and not, I know they're first-time head coaches, but it's not like they languished, you know, as a coordinator for so long. Like, they both had ascensions up, you know, to becoming a head coach.
Sean McDermott's 50, so he would have gotten his opportunity about 6 years earlier. Dan Quinn, when did he get that Falcons job? I don't even know. How old is Dan Quinn? He's only 54, so yeah, he'd have been much younger when he got his chance. Well, no, that's not true. The other direction. Hang on. Let's look at that, because that's an interesting point. Dan Quinn got his opportunity in 2015, so a decade ago. Yeah, when he was, 40, yeah, he, 40, I mean, he would 30, have had him 44? By about four or 5 years. Yeah. But I don't think that matters a great deal. I mean, who knows what? I don't think Brian Schottenheimer is this prodigy, right? Like Andy Reid was way back in the day. That doesn't mean he can't be a good fit. They obviously brought him there for a reason to work with Dak. He just didn't get the chance. So maybe that's the thinking. I don't know. But anyway, that's where we are with some of the coaching decisions. We'll come back. We're going to pick these conference championship games. We got two of them, which means we can dig deep next on Sports Daily.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Hey, sports bettors, ready for some picks destined to fail? It's time to hear what the Sports Daily staff thinks of the weekend games.
All right, welcome in, everybody. We got everybody in. Two games here, three games overall to go. Not a lot of room to make noise. TJ really bungled up everything last week. Bungled. I don't know what I was trying to say there, but either way, it's about like TJ trying to pick games last week, because it didn't go very well.
Yeah.
Here we are. Three games left. I'm sad, guys. I gotta be honest. I'm sad about this. I love football season. I love making picks. I love this segment, and we're coming down the home stretch here. Pour one out for the pick'em segment, because we've only got a couple more times of this. It's not fun. All right, here's what we're going to do. I haven't even sent you guys the lines because I wanted them up to the second. Here's where they are. Game number one, Commanders-Eagles, is a six-point line. Game number two, Bills-Chiefs, is a 1.5-point line. Here's the wild card I haven't told anybody about yet, and this is just because we're going to keep things interesting. We are also going to pick the over-under in this game. So you've got to pick the spread, and you got to pick the over-under. Surprise, everybody. It's at 47.5 for Commanders-Eagles. It's at 48.5 for Bills-Chiefs. We need a little cushion here, so we're going to turn two picks into four picks. Paul, you shaking in your boots about that? You came in, you walked in here thinking your lead was so safe, nobody was going to take a shot at it.
You know something? I thought that, but you want to know something? I embrace challenge. Challenge is my middle name. I'm ready to go on that. By the way, what is the over-under right now? Do you have those?
Yeah, it's 47.5 for Commanders-Eagles.
Okay.
And it's 48.5. for Bills and Chiefs.
Got it. Okay.
We have four things to pick here. Hey. Paul's got his lead. TJ fell further behind Paul. I don't have the exact standings, but we know that's where things stand.
Can I just make a point? I think you did really well.
I did.
And how far back? I wasn't sure how. I don't remember. I'd be real truthful.
I can pull all this up.
Yeah.
Give me a second.
How far back?
Too far back. Make a shot at it, but I did have a good week. I've been hot in these picks. There's no doubt about
that. Okay. Okay. I've got all this. Okay. So as far as overall standings right now, Paul, you have you're 8 games over 500, and you extended your lead to 5 games over TJ and myself. TJ and yours truly are tied for second.
Okay.
2 games under 500. Jacob, you're 4 games under 500, so you're 7 games back, and we don't need to talk about Brandon.
Well, so this is good news then. So if I'm 4 games back and Paul's – so if I'm 4 games under and Paul's 5 games – sorry, 9 games. So I got to come up with 9 picks over the next 2 weeks, man. Yeah. That's going to be a challenge.
Jeez, that seems like it's a little unfair, doesn't it?
A little skewed, maybe.
Hey, bring it on, big boy. Come on.
All right, so let's start with Commanders-Eagles. It's the first game. The Commanders and Eagles are very familiar with each other. They split the regular season. Two good teams, very exciting offenses for a lot of different reasons. But we'll start you off, Paul. You're the leader here. We'll start with, and we'll go first on the spread, Eagles -6. What do you think?
Well, this is going to be an interesting game. Partly because you still believe a little bit in a command. Listen, this is a fairy tale. I've kind of bought into this fairy tale, guys. A fairy tale with a young rookie quarterback, second pick of the overall draft. I mean, this is a kid that I find fascinating. And I bought in. I confess, I bought in. So sue me. I'm enjoying the story. of Jalen Daniels. I'm having fun with it.
Jaden.
That's what I said.
He said Jalen.
We all know who I'm talking about. But the point is that this is a fairy tale. This is like stuff that we'll talk about 10 years from now. I'm going to go ahead and take the Commanders. I'm buying it. It's, by the way, Hurts is hurt a little. That's my understanding. I don't know if he's going to be 100%. He's going to play, I'm pretty sure. And the question is just how lack of mobility will he have? I don't know. I think this is all setting up for another fairy tale. TJ made fun of me because I used the word fairy tale last week. This is like legendary stuff. I'm taking the Commanders.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's talking about Nick Sirianni as a fairy tale protagonist, TJ. He's sort of the antagonist of all of this. But there you go. The opportunity Paul leaves you as you pick second to take the home team.
Yeah, you know, I like the Eagles for three big reasons. You know, I think Saquon Barkley is probably should be the MVP. He's playing great football. The Eagles get this game at home, and mostly it's because Paul picked the Commanders, so give me the Eagles.
There you go. That's the best reason
Tommy,
of all.
You're next in the standing, so you can pick next. What do you think?
You know, I have been a big-time Jaden Daniels fan all the way going back to college, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Jaden Daniels and the Commanders are going to play for a Super Bowl. It's just not going to be this year. I think that the Eagles will win. I think that the Eagles will win by a touchdown or more. I think we'll see a rematch from 2 years ago, Chiefs and Eagles in the Super Bowl. And I think that obviously the Chiefs will get it done because I'm not a Nick Sirianni guy at all. But I think that Saquon is going to be too much for what the Commanders have to stop him. So give me the Eagles. I'm going to lay those points.
This is so hard because the Eagles and the Chiefs were my pick before the season to make the Super Bowl. I'm going to pick the Eagles for only that reason and hope that I'm wrong, because I would love to see Jaden Daniels get in there. I do think he's got a big challenge ahead of him, and I know he's played this team twice, but he is going up against, you know, the top defense in football. This isn't the Lions anymore, who might be at the moment one of the worst defenses in football. And I just cannot imagine Philadelphia will allow itself to make the mistakes that Detroit made to let Washington win that game last week. Give the ball to Saquon Barkley 40 times. I don't care what it takes. Play good defense. Let Saquon carry it. Try to break a couple off. See if Hurts can break another one off. I'll take the Eagles at home. Man, that's a lot of points, Brandon. What do you think?
I don't think Washington punted last week. All the turnovers they were able to face to force against Detroit, the status of Jalen Hurts, everything is just pointing to me to take this Commander spread. The Eagles can still go win by 1, 2, 3, 4. I think Washington has enough to be able to keep this one close. I think this is going to be a great NFC Championship game. Give me the Commanders on the road.
All right, let's flip it around. TJ, you go first on the over-under for this game at 47.5 points. Oh wait, what's that, Paul? What is Paul? What do you need, Paul?
Let me do this for you guys. You know, I'm a magnanimous kind of fella. You know, let me do this. Let me go first on all of them. Just let me go.
Okay.
We'll give
TJ that opportunity.
I like that a lot.
For you guys to all take right. islands because you. I don't want to say that I'm not fair because I am fair. So let me go ahead and go first. So we're going over under. Is that correct?
That's right.
And right now, that overall over under spread is 47.5. At 47.5 is going to probably be an over for me, and I'll tell you why. Because the Commanders are capable of scoring 47 points by themselves in this particular game. Now, I'm exaggerating a little, but you get the point. This is a good offense. They could easily score 37 points. I'm going to go take the over, fellas. I'm going over, and an easy over.
Easy over, TJ. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
I do agree, but I'm not going to pick that now. So I love the Eagles defense. I think it's going to be a low scoring bout.
all right. So Paul, Tommy, where are you with this?
I like the over too, but I'm like TJ, I can't take it because I've got to gain some ground here. I can see a path, honestly, in which this could be an under type game. And it's mainly going to be, you know, number one, if the Eagles defense can try to limit what Jaden Daniels wants to do, whether it's on the ground or through the air. But then number two, I think that if it's, you know, if Saquon can't get it going quite to the level that we've seen the last couple of games. And I know his like rushing totals as far as the props market are insane for good reason, don't get me wrong, but if the Commanders, they're going to sell out to try to do everything they can to stop Saquon and have Jalen Hurts try to beat you, that would be the path. So I can see it potentially happening. I'll take the under.
All right, so one of the games they played this year in Philadelphia went under. One of the games they played in Washington went way over. So it's hard to take a lot from either of those things. I just think if I'm taking the Eagles, and I am, I think that game flow lends itself to the under. I think the Eagles would love for this game to go under. So I'll take the under as well. Brandon?
Yeah, when you look at A.J. Brown, and he has, I think, three catches this postseason, Jalen Hurts status, Washington's going to be selling out to get Saquon. I think we're going to see a lot of Jaden Daniels on the ground. Everything just points to the under for me in this game with how the game flow should go. But that means Paul will probably win this one, but I'm going to be on the under too.
Fellas, I appreciate you.
Paul Island. I think I'm the only one who didn't make that pick based on an island. I guess Brandon did too. And so Tommy and TJ are with Paul, but not picking with him in the gamesmanship spirit. All right, Bills, Chiefs, fellas, we've talked about this game a lot. We'll keep talking about it till it happens. Is the hype train out of control for this one? Everything in the Vegas lines indicates it. We've got it at 1.5 this morning. That's good news if you were on the Chiefs side of this, because it's been as big as 2, maybe even 2.5, but we're taking it at 1.5. Paul, the Chiefs going back to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, this is a really interesting game, and I'm not sure how to go on this game. But the thing is I asked myself, how many yards will the Bills pass for? How many yards will the Chiefs rush for? Those are sort of the first two questions that pop into my mind. Those are good questions, because I'm not sure I know. Last week, the Bills did not throw the ball as well. They didn't catch the ball as well, ran the ball fairly well. But I don't know. This is a tough game on a spread of 1.5 points. That's not much. However, I'm going to go with defense instead of offense. The possibility of the Chiefs' defense playing well, I think, is greater than the offense for the Bills playing well. So with that being said, fellas, I'm going to go ahead and take the Chiefs, and I'm going to give the 1.5.
This is a great strategy by Paul, because now he's going to force everybody to take the Bills if they want to play it that
you
way.
For no other reason than to watch
people have to pick the Bills here. So TJ, I don't remember which side of this you were. I think we all are kind of on the line on this, but there you go. You got to take the Bills to make up the ground, or can you stomach that?
I'm just really glad that this isn't a 1 point spread and it's a 1.5 point spread, because if anybody's going to find a way to win and not cover in this game, it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. So for that reason, give me the Buffalo Bills, and that reason.
You get the 1.5 there, Tommy.
I'm going to tell you my final score prediction in this game: Chiefs 24, Bills 23. The Bills cover the number.
Okay. 1.5 plays. I'm going to take the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs will win, so I'm gonna get on the other side of that number. But the Chiefs are the best on paper that they've been all year in a season where they essentially went 15-1. That one loss was to the Bills, but the letdown games we saw from the Bills in the regular season, the Chiefs just didn't have one. They have not had that kind of game this year. And now they're the healthiest they've been all season long. Give me the Chiefs, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes owns the Bills when it comes to the Chiefs, 3-0 all time, I believe it is. This Chiefs defense playing lights out. And I have no stake, as Tommy made sure to let everyone know at the top of the segment, in the outcome of this pick segment. First 4 weeks really hurt me there. But yeah, I'm not picking against Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, in the AFC Championship. I think they'll win by 2.
Yeah, right. It could be 1.5. I'm glad that line moved, because I have wanted to take the Chiefs, but I think we all envision a close game. And there it is. All right, one more then. We'll go the over-under here, which is moving up. 48.5 now, actually bigger than the other game, which blows me away, but there it is, Paul. What do you think?
Well, here's the problem with this game. Once again, I just stated, how will the passing game be for the Bills? How will the running game be for the Chiefs? I think both these teams have defenses that right now are playing pretty good football. I'm going to go under. I think I'm going to go under on this one. I'm not convinced. Who was it? Tommy just said a little while ago, I think you gave a score that was 47, total points of 47. So he thinks it's probably going to be under as well. I think there's an excellent chance that it is under. I have no other choice but to make it tough on you guys. I'm taking the under.
Taking the under. All right, TJ, there you go. What do you think?
All that I know is I haven't drank my coffee yet, and Paul's being a real something that I can't say based on my Odyssey FCC training. So I guess I'm just going to go ahead and take the over in this one. I guess it's moving up for a reason, so give it to me.
Tommy?
I misspoke when I gave you my final score a minute ago. I did say 24-23. I actually meant 28-27 is my final Chiefs Chiefs win. So I'm going to take the over there. I'm not very good at math. That's why I'm on the radio. So I'm going to take the over.
Listen, guess how many times the Chiefs have gone over that number this year? Any guesses?
Three. Four.
Four. One of those was an overtime game. It took overtime to get over. They just don't. That's not their style. If I'm picking the Chiefs to win the game, they don't want this game to get over, right? Like, that's not how they. That's how Buffalo plays, not how Kansas City plays. Buffalo's the team scoring 30 points. What is it? 13 times this year. The Chiefs haven't done that one time. They don't play the style right now that lends itself to that number. So if I'm taking the Chiefs, I'm taking the under. Brandon?
Yeah, this just feels like a ball possession game. I mean, heck, in the last Chiefs game against the Texans, there was not even two full possessions in that third quarter alone. I think, both teams are just going to play keep away from each other. It's going to be a fun one. But, yeah, I'm going to take the under.
Now, I left out in my analysis there that one of those games that went over was Chiefs-Bills. So, look, I've said it all week. It is a hard game to read. It is a strategic, like the way it starts will be fascinating. The adjustments that are made will be fascinating. PJ Glasser mentioned yesterday maybe a first half under as the teams are sort of jabbing and feeling each other out. But he actually liked the over for the total game. And I get it. Like, if a game gets into a back and forth affair, it lends itself to the over, especially with those two quarterbacks. So there's our picks. We will have picks for the Super Bowl. So we'll kind of take a week off. Then we'll go to the Super Bowl. And when that happens, we'll come up with lots of crazy stuff to pick. We'll come up with some of the fun props. We'll have fun with it. There is a lot on the line here, a lot of pride, no trophy, No cash prizes for the winner, Paul. But, Paul has the opportunity year to brag.
This would be a three-peat for you, right? The Chiefs are going for a three-peat. Paul Savage is going for a three-peat.
Yeah, me and Patrick Mahomes, we're like two peas in a pod.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. When they try to make those comparisons, they do draw that conclusion for sure. All right, Brandon, TJ. Maybe catch a little nap. You guys got Catch a Kansas coverage coming up tonight. Don't forget, high school basketball is in full swing. You can find it all. Brandon and TJ will have that for you. And Rachel tonight on 12 News. And, of course, at catchatkansas.com. Thanks, fellas.
I'll be at the Chiefs game on Sunday. So,
yep. It's a good point. Look for Brandon's coverage. Always got the latest on dogs pooping on the field or Taylor Swift walking down the tunnel. That kind of coverage you'll only find.
Chiefs have not lost at home since Chief Hunt did that. So
that's right. So just the backstory on that. Brandon got a great video of a dog. Was this the Hunt's dog? Is that right?
Yep. Last year, Christmas Day.
Taking a dump on the field after the Chiefs took a dump against the Raiders, and they haven't lost at home since that video. Since that dump.
It's that quality, wholesome content that I'm here for. I'm always here for.
That's what
I get paid for too.
That's the big stuff.
So look for Brandon's coverage and the football too on Sunday after the game on 12 News all night long. Enjoy that coverage. All right, fellas, we'll see you. We're coming up on a break here, so we'll do that. When we come back, we can dig more into Chiefs Bills, get Paul's take on that. We can look around the rest of the sports world as well. It's Sports Daily on a Friday. Don't go away. We got more coming your way right after this.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Paul Savage sticking around. We're all enjoying some Prairie Fire coffee, as we do always here at our Odyssey family of studios. They keep us fueled up, charged up, and ready to roll through Sports Daily. We appreciate that. Go through a couple of the viewer comments throughout the show here, and we'll play a little catch-up. Seth, who I believe is the great listener, viewer, who warned me about taking a sledgehammer to my driveway to get rid of some of this ice.
Yeah.
He says he broke down and bought an ice scraper from Amazon the other day. I assume Seth then messaged me privately and was trying to go through some of the tips and things that he's seen. He's got the same issue I've had with our driveway. Hopefully today's the day, Seth. Hopefully today is the day.
He was warning you against a sledgehammer. He was warning you a flamethrower, like all the different things you wanted to do to try to get that ice off your driveway. It's a good thing that he chimed in, because you probably would have had a pretty broken up and bad shape driveway.
Yep. If that doesn't encapsulate the rage that I feel for the ice in front of my house, know that I was ready to go find a flamethrower, whatever it takes, because it's insanity out there. Rick, when we were talking the Shockers, said he had Memphis -9.5. Oh man, he took it live in his parlay, and that killed. I know another guy. Won't name names here, that took Memphis live at 8.5. Didn't cover. Who was it yesterday? It was Curtis, Chris, I think, that asked us. I know it was Austin on X asked us yesterday. Do you take the Shockers +13? I didn't like either side of it. I almost always like the Shockers with that big a number, though, because of what we talked about there. You know, they're capable of hanging around and doing these things. So hopefully everybody, is making money out there. Hopefully everybody makes a little money with the Chiefs and the Bills. We've talked about it from the betting angles. We've talked about it from the strategic angles. I'm curious to get your take on this, Paul. I actually think the Texans' defensive game plan against the Chiefs was pretty good. They made a lot of mistakes that cost them the game, but the Chiefs' offense wasn't running away with that one last week. Do you take anything away from that if you're the Bills? Because it's pretty hard to stomach the idea of letting Travis Kelce eat the way he did. But in totality, it was a decent, overall offense for the Chiefs. Like, if you're the Texans, I don't think you look at your defensive performance in that game and think that's the reason it cost you.
Well, if you're the Chiefs, you're going to look at the game with the Texans, and you're going to say, we've got to do better at pass protection. Don't you think that was a part of the problem with some of the sacks, with some of the hurries? It was obvious that Mahomes was not comfortable sitting in the pocket, because he couldn't sit in the pocket. He had to move around in the pocket. He had to pop out of the pocket here and there. And that, to me, that is the difference of this game. If you're the Bills, you're thinking to yourself, well, we're just as good, if not better, than the Texans when it comes to pass rush. And if you're the Bills, obviously you've got to get Mahomes not comfortable in the pocket. Comfortable in the pocket for a Mahomes means that he's going to score some points, run up some yardage. To me, that's one of the keys of this game. How much pressure can the Bills get on Patrick Mahomes? I think that's one of the big deals.
I think, Tommy, to that point, like, I don't think you can expect a better performance from the Chiefs offensive line than what they gave you in that game or any game, because that's not what they're good at. They haven't all year. They've been better than bad recently since they moved Joe Tooney out there, and all the credit in the world to Joe Tooney. Like, if we look at this season and the Chiefs win another Super Bowl, I think there is a very real case to be made that Joe Tooney has been as valuable as any Chief in making that happen, because that move has allowed them to at least look more like themselves than they were for a large portion of the season.
Yeah, I think it just shows how low that bar is, because it was down at the very bottom. It's not like Joe Tooney is, playing lights out left tackle. Because that's not his natural position, and
he hasn't done it since college.
And he's an all pro at left guard, and so that is obviously that's not an ideal situation to move your all pro left guard to a position that it's not his natural position, and then you're losing his ability to be more interior on the line. The bar was set very low, and he's doing just enough so it can be better and, you know, at least help, you know, Patrick Mahomes not get killed. I would love to know, you know, Paul, you've been a longtime offensive line coach.
Defensive line coach.
But I know you how you game plan against offensive lines
all
the time. That
is correct.
You know, again, Joe Tooney's not lighting the world on fire, but it was out of necessity that the Chiefs had to move him. What kind of downgrade do you think that causes the Chiefs by not having Tooney play in his natural position?
Well, I mean, obvious for any player at the NFL level, everybody he's going to face is a great athlete. It's going to be athletic. He's going to be quick. He's going to be strong. I mean, they have all the same tools in the NFL because they're paid football players. But with that being said, the best thing that you can do is just put your body in between wherever the defensive lineman is and the quarterback is. Put your body in between them and leave it there. And that is probably the best thing that you could do. You know, just keep it simple. Try to keep the pocket intact. Try to keep the pocket at a point where you don't have to step up very far. If you're a quarterback in the Super Bowl or a quarterback in the finals, just, you know, there are certain things that you have to do. But the problem is there's a reason that there are only four teams left in the playoffs. These four teams have the ability to rush the football, and that is, rush the passer for the football. So with that being said, you got to figure this out, and you got to figure it out by Sunday. There's no question about that. But the Chiefs will. They're used to this. This is the NFL. But I'll tell you what, it's going to be a fascinating game, and I'm going to tell you right now, it could come down right to the point, who has the best protection. Which team is it that has the best protection? That might be the team, fellas, that wins this game. I mean, it could just
in a game
simply
where mistakes are amplified. Yeah, totally. But I'll say this too: the both teams and more importantly, both quarterbacks have this X factor of if that happens, they make huge plays. Look at the last time the Chiefs played the Bills. The backbreaking play was a fourth down play where Josh Allen did feel pressure and then ended up running for a long touchdown. How many times have we seen Patrick Mahomes make huge plays in games with his legs? I can tell you right now that one of the, you know, bets I'll make, like a parlay type bet within the game, is that both of these quarterbacks rush over their total. Because I think you're right, Paul. I think the pressure on the quarterback is such a big factor, but Chris Jones said it yesterday. Buffalo's running the ball so effectively, but a lot of that comes from Josh Allen. It's not the same as when you're rushing CJ Stroud, because Josh Allen will take off and kill you if you're not, what is it called, Paul, in your world, disciplined in your assignment?
Yeah.
Like if you're not disciplined in your assignment and you just go try to get this guy, he's going to run away from
you. You've got rush alleys. There's certain areas that you got to rush in because everybody's got their area. You take those away, so you limit where the quarterback can go is really what you're saying, Jacob. And that's well stated, I think, on your part. And I get it. I understand that. And that's what this game may come down to. You've got two all-pro quarterbacks. You've got two offensive lines. One's better than the other. That kind of gives you a little hint as to where this game could end up going. And I think that might be if the Chiefs lose this game, it's going to be because the offensive line did not give protection. I'm just giving you the headline right now. I'm going to just give you that Patrick Mahomes tried
that's
to create.
They lost, couldn't that's why get, they yeah. lost the Super Bowl to the Buccaneers.
That's right. And this is part of the problem right now with the Chiefs. They've got a small window on being successful. And when you have an inferior to the other team's offensive line, it's a real advantage for the Bills right now, because guys, their offensive line I think is better than the Chiefs at this point. And I think that's a real advantage.
It is in pass block.
In pass rush. Yeah, I mean
nobody's line is better than the Chiefs in the middle.
No,
nobody's.
No, but but I'm just saying this is going to be an interesting game. And you know, all the time we talk about controlling the line of scrimmage, whoever has the most success in this football game on the line of scrimmage. I mean, this is really for every football game, but in this game in particular, this is a particular game where this might be said, whoever controls the middle on both sides of the ball in this game is going to win this football game, guys. Two good quarterbacks, good receivers, good defenses, great pass rush on both sides. This is going to be whoever controls the middle is going to win this game.
You think it's a time of possession thing, taking that, Tommy, as simple as that? Whoever controls that part of the game, because it, I do agree that it'll sort of be the Bills run game versus the Chiefs short passing game, which sort of is their run game. Like that's the, you know, whoever does that better. I agree with that. Whichever team is better at that particular thing will probably be the winner here. I just don't see, Tommy, at this point, the way these teams are playing, either team coming out, making a bunch of mistakes and turning the ball over.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's as simple as just a ball control game. I think that that's going to be a part of it for sure, you know, and who can keep the time of possession on their side and all of that. But I do think that even though both of these teams have done a pretty good job at limiting mistakes, I think that there will be, like, there's at least going to be one turnover, right? At least
one.
If not two. And that's going to be, you know, I think whichever team can take advantage of that is going to be the team combined with the time of possession, you know, that will ultimately prevail in this game. I think that you can combine a ball control type thing and a team that, you know, can well time some kind of turnover. And I think that's ultimately going to, you know, result in the win.
Yeah. You know, listening to Tommy kind of reminded me of something, Jacob. A bet I would like to seen us make on that Kansas City Bills game. I would have loved to have seen us make a bet over under Kelce's catches, not yards, but catches. I think that would have been, I think, and maybe if the Chiefs get to the Super Bowl, that might be a bet we want to take a look at doing, because I think that's an interesting bet. And one of the things that we've got to talk about with regards to this particular game on Sunday between the Bills and the Chiefs is Kelce. How important he's going to be. Jacob, you kind of, you know, refreshed my memory when you said, you know, it's going to be the short passing game with the Chiefs. Well, if the Chiefs
six
are going
six and a half, by the way, is that number? Six and a half.
Oh gosh, that's a tough number. Would you go over?
I'd go under. I think.
I think I would too. I don't want to. But the point is that you kind of made me think about that. How important is Kelce to this short game with the passing game? Because you're right, Jacob. There's going to be a certain amount of rushing will be replaced by, you know, those 5 yards out, those little 8 yard curls, or those little short, shallow.
That's what the Chiefs
slants
have done all year, late in the year. Once they could finally block it up and they got their receivers back, like that's what they've done.
Right.
So it's not like we haven't seen that. But the last thing for me, and then we got to take a break. Like what we saw the Lions do, what we saw the Ravens do, which was just make a ton of mistakes in their games. I find it highly, highly unlikely either of these teams will make a ton of mistakes in this game, whether that's key drops, whether that's turnovers, whether that, whatever it is, these are the two most disciplined like teams. And that's a big, big part of it. That's a part of the reason everyone thinks the Chiefs get all the calls, right? Dang. Is because a big reason for their success this year has been how disciplined they've been this year. Can we just not have the refs have any part of this outcome? Because I don't have the energy for that.
The refs are a part of every outcome in the NFL.
Can we not have a missed face mask or one of, like, can we just, I don't have the energy for that. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up Sports Daily for the week next.